Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is the four quadrants of creation. And the numbers to call to get coaching on any area of your life are 866-254-1579. It's toll free, 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach the show on 760-918-4300. And as always, I like to set the table by talking about the topic. And actually, there's quite a lot to say about the topic today. So let's start this way. Think about something that you've, so far at least, you failed to achieve or create in your life. So actually pick something specific, like, oh, I wanted to learn Italian and I just didn't. I wanted to bring in $50,000 this year and I haven't. I wanted to find my dream partner. And I haven't. Whatever it is for you, answer this question. Is it because you couldn't? Is it because if you're being really honest with yourself, you didn't really want to? Or is it some combination of the two? And the reason that question is so important is because it really speaks to the two primary things that lead to success in business and in life. And the first one is commitment. That's your want to. I want to do this enough to actually go through the process. And competence. So commitment is the want to, the amount of desire and willingness. Competence is the how to. That's the amount of skill and capability you're currently able to harness. So I like to think of these in quadrants. So if you wanted to draw at home, you could draw a four square. And on the left-hand side, you've got high commitment, low commitment. And across the top, you've got low competence, high competence. So if you want to create this, if you want to fill this in, go ahead and write in the bottom left square of your four square, the great unknown. And the great unknown is the area of low competence, low commitment. And that's when you've got something you aren't particularly good at and you don't particularly care about, but you also don't know it. You haven't explored it. And sometimes stuff in the great unknown is actually where you'll find what really matters to you in your life. You'll find the next big thing. Because what holds us back in life, it's not usually the problems that we know about and are actively attempting to solve. Oh, well, I'm struggling with this. What actually holds us back is what we don't know that we don't know. And that's a weird thing because, well, how do I know? I don't know that I don't know. So how do I know there's something there? There's always something there because we have a limited capacity for attention. So it doesn't mean you have to delve into everything in order to learn something. It's just that active curiosity and a greater comfort with the unknown, it just serves you well. And that's regardless of what you choose to do with your time. Now, the next quadrant to look at is low commitment, high competence. And it's what I call incidental success. I remember I was having a conversation with a friend about what he was going to do when he grew up. And he said, he was probably 30, but he said he'd probably continue to work in the software industry despite the fact that he particularly didn't like it because he's good at it and it pays well. And think about this. Is this true for you? Because it's surprising how many people I work with have become successful at something they don't really care about, but haven't really seriously considered basing their life decisions or career decisions around what they'd actually love to do. And once you do, once you begin to redesign your life around what you'd love to do, it's a completely different life. So I'm going to come back to this. I'm going to share the other two quadrants after the break. If you want to get in the show, the numbers to call 866-254-1579, toll free, 866-254-1579, or from outside the United States, you can reach the show by dialing your country code and then 760-918-4300. And we're going to go to the phones. We're going to go to Rita in San Francisco. Rita, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Well, you could fix my life for me.
Perfect. I've got the next 6 minutes free. Let's do it.
Perfect. That's plenty of time. Okay. So I'm stuck, figuratively and literally. I want to move to San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And I joined the month-long program to that that you have to my impossible. Right. Mine was finding a job in 30 days in San Diego. And it's 2 weeks. I have not found a job in San Diego. Mm-hmm. And I want to go there, and I just don't know how I could do it. And I definitely can tell I'm in resistance about it. But at the same time, it seems real that I can't find a job. So how could I possibly move there? So this is my, yes, I'm sort of
so
stuck here.
No. I got it. So can we play with it?
Sure.
Okay. So do you need a job? Do you need cash? Or would you just feel better if you had a job before you moved?
I would say, no, I probably need cash, and I would feel better if I had a job before I moved.
Okay, great. So one of the things that keeps us stuck is we're trying to solve the wrong problem.
So I have a but.
Well, how can you have a but? I haven't said anything yet. But okay, well, I mean, except for the obvious one. But carry on, Rita. Yes, tell me your but.
Well, because what happens if I get there and I can't get a job? Then
That's not a but. That actually is the problem, is that you think that that's a meaningful question. And I'm not making fun of you. You know this.
No, yeah, I know. I'm stuck on that question
So here's the thing.
I think.
We've just taught the first weekend of a training that we run from time to time called Financially Fearless. And It's built around a fairly simple notion, which is that people think that life works, or even if they don't think it, they act as if life works from the outside in. That what happens outside me is what determines my experience on the inside. The problem with that is the world doesn't really work that way. What's going on inside us, the way that we're thinking, the experience that we're having, projects out into the world and creates the results that we create in the world. So what happened on this weekend is person after person came in explaining why they had to have money before they could let go of money fears. Because if I only have this thing outside me, and for some it was one amount of money, for some it was another amount of money, for some it was, you know, what seemed like a vast sum, for some it seemed a very small sum, but it was always going to be something outside of them that made it okay, that made it possible for them to man up, that made it possible for them to go for it, that made it possible for them to feel playful around it, that made it possible for them to be creative with it. And what they found one by one, and what you will find, maybe on this, maybe while we're speaking now, maybe after we're done, is that actually you can be creative, you can bring your best self to the world, you can find a way to address whatever needs addressing before you have a job, or even without a job. Now, it sounds to me, and just stay with me for a minute, okay? You can butt me again in a minute.
Okay.
It sounds to me like there are two things going on. One is you need a certain amount of cash in order to make the move, set up the new home. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay. And that's an amount of cash that you do not currently have access to.
I mean, I don't know. I don't have it in the bank. Like, but I was trying to think of ways on our action day of how I could get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up with a couple of ways, not a ton of cash, but some of what I need.
Okay. So notice that when you put your attention on that problem, you actually began to come up with creative solutions.
Yeah, because that seems easier.
Right. Well, that's because that's a real problem. Real problems are always easier to solve than imaginary ones. I know that sounds
Why didn't you just tell me that?
I just did.
This is
you
great.
You didn't call until now.
Okay, next.
Okay, next. The other thing that you're wrestling with is it feels like if you had a job, you'd feel safer. It would feel like a less risky move.
Yes.
Okay. So let me tell you a story. So when I moved from London to Los Angeles, I had a job. And I only moved because I had steady income, so that was going to cover me while I kind of got things going. I was here 3 weeks when the company just went under.
Thanks.
Yeah, it sucked. It was not my plan. Now, the thing is, I was already here. So I got to solve the real problem of, I'm in LA, I've moved my family here, you know, how do we afford a home? And I solved it because it was a real problem, and real problems you can always solve. Had I thought I needed to solve that problem before I left London, in other words, had I known that the job wasn't going to be there, I wouldn't have left London. Because I was thinking at that time, oh, it's an outside-in world. The job means I can go. And the problem with the outside-in world, the problem with thinking that something outside of you is what's going to make it okay is, and you may have noticed this, the nature of what's outside you is change. Like, things don't last forever in the outside world. And so if that's what you're dependent on, it's like trying to, you know, building your house on shifting sands. It's just
which
not
I've always done or tried to do, and it's circular. It's like a looped pattern that just doesn't work, and it makes me it stresses me out, and I don't get to be as creative as I am because I'm stuck in that. Now I just got what you said about being more comfortable with the unknown, because I'm not very comfortable with the unknown, so that's why I'm trying to fix these imaginary problems before they come up, and I'm stuck. I haven't done a lot towards the goal.
Yeah, and of course you're stuck, because there's nothing there to grab onto, because it's not it is circular because it's up in your head.
Okay, so what are the steps that would I take next if I'm not looking for a job as my primary goal, and just moving to take classes, because I'm the one that's going to medical school that's in Club Fearless, and because my classes are in San Diego. How do I approach that? Because I don't think I've been putting that much creativity into it. Now that I think about it, I've been putting creativity into something I can't.
Okay, so now here's the thing, Rita. This is not what I am about to say now is not going to sound like rocket science. And you may be deceived into thinking I'm not very bright at all. But just bear with me.
Okay.
Okay. If I wanted to move to San Diego, I would be looking at how am I going to get there? I would be looking at where am I going to stay when I get there? And that's pretty much actually it right now. Like, once I knew the answer to those things, I would then start looking at the next thing is, okay, back to the thing that I started to look at, you know, you started to look at of, okay, what are some creative ways that I can get some cash in the short term?
Okay.
In other words, handle what's in front of you.
Okay.
Because you can. The problem with trying to solve a problem in the future is that you don't live there.
Well, this is way easier than I thought.
It always is. It's not you. It's just the nature of reality.
Okay. That's perfect. All right,
thank
Michael.
Thank you very much,
Rita.
Thank you
so much again.
You're
all right,
welcome.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. You know, I love that. I love that for so many reasons. One is because she figured it out, and that's always how it works. You know, I just talk at you guys till you figure it out. But the other is because it is always simpler. If it doesn't seem simple yet, it's because you're thinking about it too much. You're overthinking it. When you've got clear commitment, I really want to go to San Diego, then sure, there's some competencies involved. I need to know how to get there. I need to know where I'm going to stay. I need to know how I'm going to pay for it. But if the want to is there, you'll figure out the how to. And what a lot of us try to do is obsess about the how to without tapping into that energy that the want to gives us. Commitment gives us clarity. Commitment says, I am doing this. I am in this game. The only question is, what do I need to do next? What makes it seem circular for a lot of people is that they get caught up into, I need to know how before I can even let myself want it. How could I commit when I don't even know what it is that I'm supposed to commit to? I don't know how I'm going to do it. How can I commit to that? How can I commit to moving to San Diego? I don't know how I'm going to get there. How can I commit to going for my degree? I don't know how I'm going to get my degree. How can I commit to this relationship? I don't know how I'm going to feel about them in 12 years. Well, it doesn't work that way. Your commitment is what opens up the space to create. The how-to comes from the want-to. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Delaware and speak with Tammy. Tammy, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael.
Hello.
I am drawn to your topic for one primary reason, and that is losing weight. Mm-hmm. I feel like that I have gotten to a place in my life where a lot of things have come into place. So finally kind of reaching success on a lot of different levels. And that's the one place, however, that I continue to kind of bump up against that mm-hmm. goes nowhere.
So everybody's got one of these. I call them the loaded goal. Because it's the one that's loaded with so much meaning.
Yeah.
It's the one that's about you. Right. Oh, successful in business? Yeah, I can do that. Oh, loving relationship? Sure, I can do that. But this one's about me. For somebody else, it'll be different. They'll go losing weight? Yeah, no problem. Successful relationship? Yeah, no problem. But business? I can't do business. Do you know who I'm not? And we've each got them. And what makes it hard is that we start to think it's about us. So... And again, come back to me if this isn't true for you, Tammy, but I'm gonna make a guess that you think it means something about you that you weigh what you weigh.
Yes.
Yeah. So what do you think it means about you?
What does it mean about me?
Yeah.
Oh gosh, I have a whole litany of things. You know what comes to the top of my head is that I'm lazy.
Oh, okay. So here's the problem. Is you see somebody who doesn't have this goal loaded, all they have to do is lose weight. You have to overcome your laziness first.
Yeah.
And losing weight's not that hard. Honestly, I mean, I know that may sound facetious, but you know, it's pretty straightforward. It's math.
True.
So what makes it seem hard is that we load it up with all this meaning and personalize it, and make it about us. And I have to be this kind of, I'd have to be more disciplined. I'd have to be less lazy. I'd have to not be such a loser. I'd have to get comfortable with being attractive. No, what you'd have to do is take in less calories than get burned. What you'd have to do is shift your metabolism through movement so that your natural burn rate goes up. That's it. I mean, there is no other way to lose weight. You can change the metabolism through taking a pill, and that will temporarily do it. And so, yeah, in that sense, you could say there's another way to do it. But even people who take appetite suppressants, well, it works because you're taking in less than you're using up.
Right.
So here's, and I don't know if you've ever done it, but I am a huge believer in a simple system created by a friend of mine, one of my clients, Paul McKenna. It was actually the best-selling book in the country last week, called I Can Make You Thin. And it's based on four really simple, what he calls the golden rules. And I'm going to explain to you why they work. So you ready for this?
Yes.
Okay. Rule number one. Eat when you're hungry. Now that may seem obvious, or they may seem counterintuitive, or you may feel, I'm always hungry. But the truth is, one of the things that happens is that messes up our metabolism is we continually starve ourselves by not eating when we're hungry. And so what the body does, and it's trained to do this for survival, is it goes into fat storage mode. Like, you know, camels' humps?
Mm-hmm.
The reason camels have humps is because they don't know, it's often a long time till they're going to get to eat again or drink again. So they store fat in those humps so that they have the nutrition stored up for the journey because it may be weeks or even months before they can eat again. If you see camel who is at a certain point, their hump is much smaller because they've used up a lot of that reserve.
Wow.
Now, the thing about human beings is we don't actually tend to go 2 months between meals. Yet we act because we don't eat when we're hungry. We throw our body into that mode, which it has as a protection for us. And so we store fat. So even if we eat less than other people, more of it gets stored as fat because our body goes, hey, we don't know when the next meal's coming. And we keep giving the hunger signal. They keep not feeding us. So there must be a shortage. Let's start storing fat. So rule number one, eat when you're hungry. Rule number two, Eat what you actually want, not what you think you should have.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason for this is because when you eat what you think you should, you're rarely satisfied by what you're eating. So you wind up eating more because you can never get enough of what you don't really want. When you eat what you actually want, two things are happening. One is your body's going, hey, this is great. They're listening to me now. I'm going to stop telling them that all I want is chocolate ice cream and actually talk to them about what I want. Because what you'll find, to your shock, is there will come a day, if you eat what you actually want and you eat when you're hungry, where what you'll want will be broccoli. What you'll want will be a salad. And it will be genuine. It won't be, I should have one. It'll be, no, God, that's what I fancy. They did a study with children where they took children. This was in the 1930s when they could get away with this. I still think it's a cool experiment. But they took a group of children, I think 3 to 5 years old, and they gave them 24-hour access to every kind of food you can imagine with no supervision, no adult supervision about how much they could eat, what they could eat. They just had open access to a cafeteria that had every kind of food from the healthiest to the least healthy. Now, in the first week, what do you think the kids ate?
The unhealthy stuff.
Right. By the end of the month, because they kept track of what every kid ate, almost every kid ate a balanced diet.
Wow.
It didn't look like a balanced diet because it came out of sequence. But if you let the body do it without a lot of noise in between about, oh, you should do this, you shouldn't do that, oh, God, I'm terrible, oh, my God, how could anyone love me, and all that kind of stuff that I know goes on, the body will actually start to tell you what it really needs, not craves. Okay? That makes sense?
Yeah, it does.
Rule number three. Eat consciously. Enjoy every mouthful. In other words, what we tend to do is go unconscious when we eat. We'll be watching TV, we'll be chatting to friends, we'll be reading a book. We do anything. We pay attention to anything but the food in our mouths. One of the reasons for that is because we don't like the food in our mouths because we're not eating what we actually want. We're eating what we think we should have.
That absolutely fits.
Now, it's extraordinary. One of the ways that Paul talks about, and I can make you thin, that makes it easier to eat consciously is to slow down your eating speed. Now, that doesn't mean you always have to do it. But if just for a little while, you slow your eating speed right down to maybe half or even a quarter of what you normally, the speed you normally eat, you'll find that you start to taste your food. And you'll find that at some point, your food stops tasting as good. And that takes us to golden rule number four. Stop when you're not hungry anymore. It's crazy. That's not what people do. What they do is they stop when the food on their plate is gone, or if they've been trained to only eat half when half the food on their plate is gone. No, if you're still hungry and your plate is empty, get more food. If you're not hungry anymore, but your plate is still half full, stop. Now, there's a delay in the satiation signal from the body. Because we're running out of time, I want to finish this in a burst. Okay, so just hear me to the end.
Okay.
If you were not messed up in your head about thinking that it's about being lazy or about being whatever it is that you or anyone else listening makes up about why they can't lose weight, just think about this. Why would you ever eat when you weren't hungry? Why would you ever eat something you didn't want? Why would you ever not enjoy your food? And why would you ever keep eating when you weren't hungry anymore? This is actually a completely natural way of eating. It just doesn't feel normal because it's not how we've been taught to eat.
Right.
All right, Tammy, thank you very much for calling in.
Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. We will be back with more of your calls, and we will be back with the other two quadrants of creation right after the break. If you like the kinds of things we talk about on the show, check us out at geniuscatalyst.com. We'll be right back after this.
Real strategies for real change. This is Supercoach with Michael Neal.
We are back. We're taking your calls, but we're also talking about the four quadrants of creation. And I want to take a little bit of time now to talk about quadrant three. So we've already talked about low commitment, low competence, where there's not much want to and there's not much skill. And that's the great unknown. There might be all sorts of things for you in there. We've talked about incidental success, where there's not much want to, but there's enough skill to be successful. Let's talk about high commitment, low competence. And that's a space I call the learning curve. And if you're filling that quadrant in, you'd write the learning curve in there. Because the larger the gap between your want to and your skill set, the steeper the learning curve is going to be. But the more that you actually get to enjoy writing it. What happens in that learning curve is for most of us, we kind of oscillate. We go back and forth between overwhelm and pure flow. Because what we're doing is we're rising up to meet the challenges of learning what we need to learn in order to live the life we want to live. Now, if you don't recognize the need to develop the relevant skills or competencies in order to get good at something, in other words, if you don't, if you just think, well, want to is supposed to be enough by itself, you're liable to fall off the curve altogether at some point. But when you do put both elements together, the want to and the how to, the commitment and the competence, you move into that final quadrant, the fourth quadrant, high commitment, high competence, the quadrant of mastery. And when your commitment and competency are both at their peak, that's when you experience and demonstrate mastery in whatever it is that you're doing. And it's not that things never go wrong. And it's not that things always work out. It's just that you're able to respond well to change. And your best is usually more than enough to create the results that you want. And the thing about mastery is things often look effortless and they can feel effortless. Not because there's no actual effort involved, but because there's no efforting. There's no need to strive or struggle in order to succeed. And if you haven't listened to the Effortless Success CDs, that's what they're about. That creation of that quality of effortlessness, that lack of efforting, that lack of struggle, that lack of stress in creating what it is that you want in your life. I'm going to finish the show today with a little bit of exercise, but for now, let's go back to the phones and let's go to Carrie in Montana. I think I'm reading that right. Carrie, are you in Montana? Hello, Carrie.
How are you?
I'm very well.
Hey, I love your show and I love your stuff and I've read several of your books and
you
know, I really feel like I've opened up and I always try to keep my focus on, like you said, the want to and really choose that good day. And things are happening. It's just I've got so many ideas. I'm creative and I've got so many ideas and about the time I start going down one path, I think of another idea and another idea. And it all boils down to being able to find my right livelihood and actually make a living at it instead of being in this sort of perpetual idea mode that I'm in, which isn't terribly lucrative.
Okay. Do you know there's a guy, Joey Ryman, who used to get paid $1 million per idea? I always thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, he created a company that was basically a thinking company. And so he got paid to think. So just saying, it's possible, even in that mode. But that's probably not exactly what you want to do with your life. So here's the first question. By the way, is it Carrie or Carrie?
It's Carrie.
Carrie. Okay. So the first question that occurs to me is to do with what do you mean when you say right livelihood, my right livelihood?
Well, one that makes my soul sing, one that makes me feel like I've really fulfilled whatever this purpose is and I'm supposed to be here, and actually lets me live the lifestyle that I want to live, none of which has happened thus far.
Right.
I've been a single parent, raised three sons alone. I'm nearly at the end of that. The youngest is 16 now, and so it's time for me to figure out what I want to do when I grow up, and the trouble is I want to do everything.
See, no, okay, so what is it that you're thinking that makes that trouble? Because, and again, let me just tell you what I hear, and then you redirect me. Because if I'm trying this on, that's what I do. When I listen to you guys, I try it on. I try and have your problem.
Okay.
And when I can feel bad the way you feel bad, I know I've probably got it, and then I fix it. So I'm listening to this, and I'm kind of going, I don't have a problem yet. So okay. So I've got lots of ideas. I've got a sense of the kind of lifestyle I want to live. I got lots of things I could do. I'm really enjoying tuning into my want to and more sort of living my life from that place. Where am I stuck? Why does this feel like a problem instead of brilliant?
Well, it feels like a problem, obviously, because, you know, there's the reality that you have to pay your bills and so forth. And the other thing is I didn't really arrive here in Helena, Montana by choice. I arrived here by circumstance. And so I don't know even where I want to be logistically or what the thing is that I want to do. I just know everything I've done up until now hasn't been fulfilling. Other than raising my children, obviously.
Okay. So I mentioned earlier this difference between this outside-in world that people act like we live in, where right. what happens outside is going to somehow create our experience on the inside. And right. the inside-out world we actually live in, where what's going on inside us gets projected out into the world and we see it and it looks real and we respond to it. Mm-hmm. The idea that there is something outside you called a job or a calling that could fulfill you is actually a false notion. I know it's a common notion,
mm-hmm.
but it's a notion that only makes sense in an outside-in world. The truth is, you are full now. Now, I'm not saying you feel full.
Mm-hmm. No, but, I agree. I absolutely have felt at my happiest, even though circumstances around me wouldn't dictate that.
So here's the thing. If you actually get that, and I get that you sort of get that,
yeah,
but
yeah,
I mean, like
I really
you actually.
Feel like I do.
So, if you actually get that, then why would you be looking for the right thing outside you to fulfill you?
Well, I guess I guess I'm saying I'm looking for the right thing inside me. I just don't know which it is. I mean,
okay. So, are you willing to stay with me? Is this okay?
Yeah. No.
Okay.
I am.
The only place you need to look to the extent that you get that it isn't out there. It's not something you have to find, it's something you already have. Now, what would be useful is for you to be able to delineate even more clearly between your own wisdom and the shoulds.
Mm-hmm.
Or the possibles, or the maybes, or the mights, or the musts, or all those other little kind of nudges that we get from the inside that are really about fear. Because in a way, you can navigate from love or you can navigate from fear.
Oh,
and when
absolutely.
You're and when you're navigating from fear, even if you sort of understand it, all that can happen outside is going to be scary because it projects from the inside out. So when you're trying to go, well, is it this? What if I don't do this? Ooh, if I don't do this, I might regret it later. But if I do this, I might regret that later because I won't be doing that. If you're caught up in that kind of conversation in your head, that's fine. It happens. But just know that's not your wisdom. Your wisdom goes, wouldn't it be cool? Your wisdom goes, I wonder what it'd be like if, you know, your wisdom is, ooh, wow, I'm doing this. It's really simple and clear. Now, part of the problem, I think, listening to you and having talked to, I don't know, 30,000 people about this, is that people get caught up in this idea that there is an answer. Like if I could only find the answer. What there is there's an unfolding. If you stay with that want to, well, what would I love to do today? Well, what am I drawn to? Where's my energy take me today? Where does my energy go up? What lights me up today?
Mm-hmm.
What lights me up right now? At some point, maybe a month from now, maybe 3 weeks from now, maybe 6 months from now. I'm not saying you've got to wait 6 months. You'll look back and you go, oh my gosh, that looks like a path. It didn't feel like a path because it felt like I was just doing what lit me up. I was just following my desire, my real like, wow, that'd be cool. But that's what guides people to these wonderful, wonderful lives, is following that unfolding of desire, that unfolding of wisdom, day by day, moment by moment. Because what a lot of people do is they go, well, I know what I want to do, so what do I have to do in order to be allowed to do what I want to do? And the more useful question, the question that will lead you to this life that I sense be up, forget how you talked about it, this life where you've got this wonderful lifestyle and you're really enjoying your life, that because that's what you want, right?
Right, absolutely.
Yeah. So what leads you there is actually enjoying your life now. And the way that you enjoy your life now is by going, hey, what would I really enjoy doing now? And it's interesting because when I explain this to people, that the question isn't, what do I have to do in order to be able to do what I want to do? It's, what do I want to do in order to do what I want to do? Like, of the million different ways I could create a lifestyle I want to live, which one appeals to me right now? Let me do something in that. Not like which one, like I'm choosing, like, okay, banking. Nope. I'm going to be an artist. Nope. Football player. Fireman. Not like that. By the way, I've just told you everything you need to know about my childhood. But more simply, what would I love to do now? God, you know what? I'd love to go for a walk. What would I love to do right now? Well, I was reading this thing about that. I'm going to see if I can find out more information about that. Not worrying that, ooh, I've got to choose. If you follow the unfolding of your wisdom and your desire, it will take you to the most beautiful place you could imagine going. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. And I really feel like that's what I've been doing. I mean, I've been making absolutely the most effort in that. And when fear thoughts creep in, of course, I switch that and try to stay with that. Like you said, enjoying the moment, enjoying the feelings at the time. You know, but there's also, I guess, I wish I could stay in that all the time.
Well, so
and,
do I.
And I'd like so, things to just take care of themselves outside themselves. But unfortunately, there are things that we do have to take care of. So
let me ask you this, Carrie.
Yeah.
These things that you have to take care of outside of yourself, are you taking care of them?
Well, I tend to go off and follow my bliss and think about taking care of them, which probably isn't a good thing.
Sure. So here's what I'm just going to give you something to go do. And
okay.
Then you can call me back another time and you can tell me what was wonderful about it or why it didn't work and why I'm just, oh God, I used to look up to you, man. Why could you tell me that? This week, what I want you to do is at some point, I want you to take a look at what actually needs to be taken care of in your life.
Okay.
And I want you to, some of it you won't be able to take care of straight away, but anything that can be taken care of this week, I want you to take care of it.
Okay.
Because what my experience tells me is that there will be less noise in your head then, and it will be much easier to hear that guiding voice, that wisdom voice. It you can have a flute playing all the time, but if there's a brass band playing next to it, it's really hard to hear.
Right. No, I wholeheartedly agree with you. And that's what I keep coming back to.
And that's exactly what I would tell you. So will you do that?
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Michael.
It's a pleasure. That's the thing. It's not that we don't know. It's not that at some level we don't get it. It's that we get caught up. We get caught up in our own fear. And even while, you know, even while Carrie was saying, you know, yeah, I do that. I see the fear and then I come back to the love. Well, sometimes you don't notice the fear, because really what that call was about was fear. I'm scared now. I see money running out. Things aren't getting taken care of. I'm scared. Well, take care of the things that need to be taken care of, always. And then it's much, much easier to tune in and follow your own wisdom and guidance. Let's go to Florida. Let's go to Jennifer. Jennifer, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
I was like Carrie, the last caller. That was my question. Like, how do you find your purpose? How do you find your what you want to do? And what you just said just made sense. So it feels like my question has been answered.
Two for one. This is great.
Yeah, it feels like, because I'm like, oh, okay, so that was the answer. All this time, I'm like, I read like so many books on how to find your purpose and, you know, what to do with your life. Because I'm in a job where, I mean, I guess I like what I do. I get paid well, but I'm not happy. So, like everyone else, I'm like dibbling and dabbling in different things. Like, oh, do I want to be a teacher, or should I be sewing, or should I be doing something else? And then every time I think about that, I'm like, oh, I just couldn't make enough money doing that. So,
You can't find something where it isn't. Like, right. If I'm looking for a shirt and it's not in the drawer I'm looking in, it doesn't matter how long I look, how hard I look, how sincere my search is, I will not find it. We all look for happiness, but we look outside ourselves. We look for what job will make me happy, what person will make me happy, what relationship will make me happy, what amount of money will make me happy, what circumstance will make me happy. We will never find it there. Now, that's not to say we won't experience moments of satisfaction when we reach a goal or solve a problem. That's part of our biological design. But as spiritual beings, your happiness is innate. It is your nature. You are that. You are what you are looking for. And because we're just conditioned, it's not our fault. It's completely innocent. Everything from the moment we're born tells us it's outside us. The only problem is it isn't. And what I found in years and years and years of doing this work is that when people relax, and stop trying quite so hard to find it outside, they start to just notice, huh, actually just being feels pretty good.
Right.
And from that place, it's not like, so you don't need to do anything and just sit on your butt and you'll be fine. Next. It's simpler than that even. To the extent that you can kind of relax and enjoy what you're doing, you will find your own well-being just keeps bubbling up to the surface. And you'll keep looking for, why am I happy? I'm in the same job. I'm doing the same things. I'm with the same people. Why am I so much happier? And it's simply because you've stopped trying to find it outside you. And that allows you the space to notice that it's already there right now. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. I don't have to work as hard.
No, you really don't. And in fact, the irony is, the hard work is why you're missing it.
Mm. Okay, well.
Thank you, Jennifer.
That feels better. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. And look, we all do it. That's our culture, right? We live in a culture that tells us it's outside us. Even if within the sort of Hay House community, we listen and we go, oh yes, no, it's inside me. We still act as if it's outside us. So like we get it. We get the idea. Oh yeah, I get it. It's inside out. It's not outside in. Yeah, my thoughts create my reality. I read that the other day. Yeah, I get it. But we don't get it the way you get a joke. Like this is Steve Chandler, my friend who I teach with sometimes. He's a wonderful coach. Check out clubfearless.net. You'll love his stuff. It's the funniest thing. He talks about it. He says, look, you either get a joke or you don't. And when you get it, it's just funny. There's no intellect involved. There's no, yes, I can talk about this at great length. You just get it. When you get that this is an inside out world, that you're experiencing your own thinking, that what's going on inside you is what you're seeing outside you, life gets so much simpler. So much gentler and so much easier. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Diane in Connecticut. Diane, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Mike. I just have to let you know, I think that you are really, really hilarious. And I know you're not trying to be funny. It's just your seriousness and straightforwardness just cracks me up. And I just enjoy listening to you.
Well, I'm glad. And the police are clearly coming to take you away now.
No, that's
so I don't know that I can take that opinion at face value, but thank you.
I'm calling with my problem, okay? My problem is I went to San Diego for a visit. I went out west for a visit 5 years ago, fell in love, came back home, and have been trying to figure out how to manifest a move from here to there for the last 5 years. I am actually in a situation now. I don't have any savings. Mm-hmm. My credit is shot. Mm-hmm. I have a halfway decent job. I have skills. I actually was in social services for a number of years, and I recently changed. I'm in pharmaceutical now. I have no idea how to manifest it. I have no family out there. no friends out there. But it's one of those things, it probably could be impossible, but what if I made that possible, and how would I do that?
Okay, so, Diane.
Yeah.
Bear with me here.
Okay.
Have you ever manifested scrambled eggs?
Yeah.
You've manifested scrambled eggs.
Yeah, I got the egg. I cracked it in the bowl. I mixed it. I put my salt and pepper in it. I put it in a skillet that had been prepared. I see.
So you made them.
Yeah.
You took the ingredients and you made them.
Yeah.
Okay. That's how you moved to the West Coast.
Sure you do.
You get in a car and drive left.
Yeah, I drive left, and then what? Like, where do I go? Like, do I go into a shelter or something? I mean, I don't know. Like, I have no family up there. I don't know anyone.
Uh-huh. And do you think you're going to meet them in Stanford, Connecticut?
No.
Okay. Now, understand, I'm not giving advice here, Diana. I am not saying get in the car and drive left.
Right.
Let me just hammer it home then. Because it is that simple. Making eggs, if you want eggs, you take the egg, you crack it, you cook it. You could make an argument, ooh, it might not taste very good. Ooh, what if it burns? Ooh, what if this doesn't actually satisfy my hunger? Ooh, what if this messes up my cholesterol? And they would all be legitimate. But they would have nothing to do with whether or not you make scrambled eggs.
Yeah.
They are all solvable problems. I talked earlier about problems that can't be solved because they're not real. Well, actually getting to the West Coast is a solvable problem. Meeting people is a solvable problem. Getting work is a solvable problem. I can tell you for a fact, living in LA and working in Hollywood, there are pharmaceuticals on the West Coast. So understand the difference between fear and doubt and getting caught up in scary thinking and the reality of, you know how to get from the East Coast to the West Coast. You know how to meet people. You know how to look for work. You know how to do jobs.
But I don't know how to get housing. Like, how do you secure that when you don't, like, I don't know.
And again, I'm not being funny, but you look in the for rent ads and you find the one that's cheap if you don't have much money, and you look at it and you go, ooh, this is crap, but it'll do. And you start there. I mean, that is it. There's nothing else to it. You crack the egg into the pan. If it's hot, it cooks. If it's not hot, it doesn't cook.
And
please understand, I'm not making light of it.
I get it.
I'm trying to show you it's your own fearful thinking that makes this seem difficult. What you don't know, you'll figure out. This is the essence of the four quadrants of creation. If you want to, you can figure it out. If you want to, you can develop the skill. If you have the commitment, you can develop the competence. But if the commitment's not there, we could talk all day and you will always have a reason why. Well, yeah, but I'm not saying you're doing that. I'm just saying, understand, all you need is what you already have, which is the want to. And the only thing I hear getting in the way of that, and I understand it, but is your own fearful thinking. And if you can see that even a little, it really won't look so scary. Okay.
Wow, I got it. Yeah.
Thank you. We're coming to the end of the show. Thank you so much for phoning in.
Yeah.
And thank you to all of you. I was going to give you an exercise, and I will just very quickly make one of those grids, fill in what for you is in each of the quadrants. What's low competence, high commitment? What's high competence, high commitment? What's low competence, low commitment? What's high competence, low commitment? My thanks to Stephen Hennick in studio for keeping things moving along. I'll be back with a brand new show next week. Until then, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.